What's up, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of It's Brewing at McEwen. I'm your host this evening, Adam Cartwright, and with me tonight is Mark Giardino and John Kaplan. I'm going to send that around the horn real quick. Mark, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, man. I'm excited to talk about a fun 5-0 week of USF baseball and an exciting week ahead. So this is one of my favorite shows to date. I mean, with the opportunity of what we could talk about today.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, with us as well is John. John, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, Adam. I think I'm going to quote Major League again. You win two in a row. We call that two in a row. You win three in a row, and that's called a winning streak. Let's keep these boys hot. Can't wait to get chop it up this week, fellas.
It has happened before. So it's awesome. Listen, speaking of winning streaks, I'm just going to throw this in real quick. Across the way there at Red McEwen Field, the softball team has been doing really, really well. I didn't see the score of their game this afternoon. Sometimes softball games catch me way off guard when it's just like 1 o'clock on a Monday and it's like, whoa, didn't know that was
Yeah,
happening. Sorry.
right.
But I know up until that, I believe they were on like a 10-game winning streak. So they are on fire right now. That's fantastic. You might notice my pace is a little quicker. That's because we got a lot of games to cover, and we're going to get right into them right now. Started off on Tuesday, we had North Dakota State come to town. First time they came to Tampa, and we did not make them feel very welcome. We started with a 9-5 victory. Jorge De Cardenas ends up with the win. I'm going to go ahead and send it to John here, man. John, what did you think about that first game on Tuesday night?
Yeah, you can't say enough about DeCardenas, to be honest. We kind of highlighted him the week prior to that, wondering who we were going to see in these midweeks when we had five games in 1 week. So, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he inherited a bases loaded jam. Nogniano ran into some trouble there in the top of the second. He had already walked in a run. And so DeCardenas comes in with that low heart rate and cold blood and just strikes the first guy out, gets the second guy to fly out. And let's zero of those inherited runners score. And I really think he kind of set the tone for that matchup. He provided us with 3 2/3. He only giving up one hit and one earned in that span. If he can limit walks in his next go around, I think that he's just another key cog in a very deep pitching rotation, as we're finding out early on. And then it was good to see Lawson Gailey make his return for USF, and then also him and Will Allen cleaning up the end of the game there with 3 1/3 of scoreless relief. You can't ask for more. Mark, what'd you think?
No, I love that we got to see two arms that we didn't see opening weekend. DeCardenas, who is somebody who's a really high upside guy. I mean, if you look at his best outings of last year, which was his first year with USF, when he's on, he is at the level of the guys that got drafted from that class with Archie and Newton. Like he can hit those velocities and pitch that effectively. The only thing that was his kind of Achilles heel last season was a few bad outings. But I mean, if he is consistent with the way he's capable of pitching, I mean, his ceiling is really high. And it's nice to think that he's not necessarily somebody that seems to be that we're counting on for weekends right now. So he could be a big time midweek weapon, which those games are going to end up being important as well with it for your RPI as the season goes on.
Absolutely. If I remember, this was a real tough night for pitchers. Strike zone was real tough to find. 25 walks combined for both teams in this one. That's
This was the night. This was the game. I was watching this one pretty closely. We were texting about it. It looked like the umpire cut the plate in half. Like he was only calling balls. I was only calling strikes on one half of the plate. Another half, he wasn't. So I
It
wouldn't take
was
it too hard if I was some of the pitchers. Yeah.
Real tough. And you look at Nockney, he really didn't have a great night. But what I think you have to kind of consider with Nockney too is he's not a guy that's really going to have a ton of success having to throw over the heart of the plate. He's really looking for guys that are going to be chasing and nibbling, kind of catching that slider as it's coming across. And when you find out as a hitter really quickly that an umpire is not going to give him anything on the outside corner, you begin to stop really chasing anything. And then you kind of sit on that heart of the zone pitch and you wait. And if you don't get it, you just see what this umpire is going to do. Well, it turns out he's going to let 12 of you walk. He's going to let 13 bulls walk on top of it, right? So as a hitter, and I think I think the Bulls did really well. We ended up with 10 hits in this, so we managed to stay aggressive. I think North Dakota got real complacent and they got to where they just really weren't swinging a lot. That doesn't do well for a pitcher like Nakayama. It wasn't a great night. I mean, he definitely, I'm not saying like all the pitches were on the umpire. He definitely missed. I think there were some at bats that got flipped on him where he didn't get a close one and then he throws the next one to the backstop. Sometimes that happens. He's got to adjust. He's got to get better. But really think it was an uphill battle for every pitcher on the mound, which really you got to give your shout to Will Allen on this. He's the only pitcher on the night that managed to not have a walk.
True
Everybody else got
freshman.
at least one. He actually faced the minimum six batters in 2 innings. So that was really good to see. Really, really good offensive night. We had a couple bulls with a couple multi-hits. Mark, what'd you think about the offense?
I thought the offense was interesting. I mean, I was excited to see that Santi Carrillo got his first opportunity to play, and he made the most out of it. When we saw the two catchers that we brought in as transfers this offseason, where like Carson Cabbage's college JUCO stats were insane, Santi Carrillo's were very solid as well. And so to see him make his debut, get two hits, two RBIs. Throw a runner out, trying to steal. I think the only thing he had was maybe one pass ball, but otherwise, I mean, he had a really nice game. So it's really nice to see for the Bulls that we've got multiple options at the catcher position. So that was good to see. And we also had three hits from somebody that Adams was scouting a long time ago and has done really well, and that's Eli Thomas. But I'm sure we'll talk about him plenty on the show.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, John. What'd you think, man?
No, I mean, literally word for word, took my notes on the game. Other than Nathan Early had that big two-run double, I believe, in the third. Nathan Early's been my pick to stay hot all season, and he's proven to be a key cog in the middle of the lineup there. And how do you pronounce? Is it Carias? Carias?
I think it's Carias.
Okay, yeah, I didn't.
I'll have to confirm later though, but
Carrillo's? Yeah.
Carias. I don't
One
really know.
L.
Seeing him have a two-hit, two RBI day. He capitalized on, I think it was right after Early had some an RBI in the third. I think it was a big third inning, if I'm not mistaken. But him throwing somebody out in his one attempt as well. I think it might have lit a little bit of a fire underneath triple, but we can kind of keep alluding to that as we get to this weekend. But yeah, no, it was
Yeah.
all around.
Definitely.
Yeah, look, I mean, we have three legit catchers this year, and I think we
I know.
saw we actually saw that with we're going to talk about Cabbage in the next game as he's going to get the next start tomorrow. But Santiago's got his own skill sets. I think Cabbage has his own skill sets, and I think Triple has his own skill sets, and we can kind of talk about those as we go. I think the skill sets that Santiago has, I think he's a really good at hitter, obviously. He picks up a couple of hits, decent behind the plate. I think he might fall behind the other two in terms of the defensive there. Throwing people out this year has been kind of hit or miss. I'm not really sure why. We saw Triple be really good last year. We've seen that kind of slack this year. I'm not really sure why, and if that's something across the board, if maybe our pitchers are just kind of holding it a little longer than they were. Maybe they were coached to maybe be a little quicker to the plate last year. This year we're being a little more relaxed on it, saying, hey, let's make sure we're getting what we need to get done, and maybe not being so urgent on being quicker to the plate. You never know. There's a lot of factors that could
Yeah, there
go into
are.
why that we're not throwing guys out. But again, I think all of our catchers have their own great skill sets. I think it's great to have three of them.
Yeah, I can't remember last time we had three really good ones.
Yeah, for right. But yeah, I think it's as good a time to any start talking about my boy Eli Thomas, man.
Yes.
He's got a great swing. He picked up three hits. He picks up 9 hits over the week. Right, he has three multi-hit games. He has a three-hit game on this one. I think what I really want to point out about Thomas is when you watch his at-bats, you kind of get the idea that he really doesn't have his timing down yet. He's shooting a lot of stuff off to the backside. We're hitting a lot of hard ground balls. We're not really getting a lot of pitches that we're driving. We saw that one that he put into the right center field gap. I think that's what the future can bring whenever the timing and everything gets locked in. Might even see that get over the yard. As he kind of gets older and gets settled in, and as that timing gets there. But what you really love to see is without the timing, this kid's a gamer, right? He is in there to battle and put barrel to ball. I don't believe he has a lot of strikeouts. I don't believe he has a lot of walks. I think when he steps into the box, the ball's going to get put in play and we're going to play some baseball. And that is what I love about it, right? Nobody likes strike. I mean, strikeouts are fun for a pitcher and people that love watching pitching. And when you get a lot of them, nobody likes walks at all, right? But when that ball's put in play and there's action, that's what I love about baseball. And that's what I love because he puts it on the ground and he hauls ass.
Yeah,
He
he's
has
faster than
about
I
three or
thought.
four ground balls and some of them are to second and he's
I
beating that
mean,
out.
yeah.
You know, just and then some of them he's beating out to get an RBI, right? He's got to beat that out for us to get a run. Hustle RBIs is what I call them. Love that. Love seeing it. Really gonna love watching him grow. And listen, Jack Lutz, you know, got to give him his props too. You know, he's a freshman getting put in this lineup. And that's something that people need to understand too, is in today's world with older upperclassmen just being able to free transfer at all these places and coaches being able to grab pieces and plug and play, it kind of takes away from the freshmen's opportunities because that's where maybe they're getting their feet wet and now they don't have it. We got two freshmen that are getting their feet wet now. I think we have some freshmen that are kind of falling victim to that. We brought in some really good corner outfielders as transfers and we got some corner outfielder freshmen that aren't getting to play. We saw Gabe Brillo get an at bat. I love the way it looked. I just think he just
Yeah,
doesn't have a we just don't have a place for him right now.
we'll talk about him over the weekend, but
Oh.
I have some thoughts.
Sorry, I think he got in a run too, but anyways, it's just fun to see. And you know, props to Thomas too. He got shoved right into the heart of the lineup. 3-4 hitter, man. Sink or swim, let's make it happen. It was fantastic. Anybody got some final notes on this one? We probably need to move on.
Move on.
Good, yeah. All right. Well, we picked up our next win the next night, 3-1. A little bit lower scoring in this one, a little bit more of a pitching battle. I thought this umpire was a little better. I remember actually commenting. I don't know if it was because I thought the first one was so bad that I was just ready to see something, but I thought he was a little better. And we actually saw some good pitching performances. And so, John, I'll let you take it away first here, man. What'd you think?
We got to see what now is a very familiar face for USF and Caden Smith. He got the nod for the start. I believe he had one hit, one earned, over 2 innings. It was a little more of an opening start kind of. But he did have 5 Ks and limiting to 1 walk. You'll see the trend on this day. I think there were only 3 walks on the day and something like 15 Ks. We kind of flipped the script on the K to walk ratio for sure. But what I want to talk about is Jonas Arabia. He's the junior transfer from Mineral City Community College. But the funnier part about that is we've heard Hannah's talking about seeing guys like Greco playing against these guys and then ending up coaching them later on in their career, right? Well, hear me out. On March 7th, 2023, which is my wife and I's anniversary, he pitched against Hannah's for SEMO. And he got touched up a bit. 2 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 4 earned. But I found that interesting when I was looking at Sarabia's stats that he had an outing against Indiana State and just was kind of like, did Hannah see something there that he liked,
Interesting.
kept in touch? But yeah, no, it really adds another dimension to this middle relief bullpen because when you look at it, we'll kind of get there. But I mean, Pontbriant, O'Donnell, those are the guys that are really getting the late inning work, but you've got people like Nolan Bernard, who I can talk about next because he pitched in this game. He went damn near 3 perfect innings. He gave up 1 hit, 3 Ks, no walks. And then, as I was saying, Pontbriant and O'Donnell combined to close and over 2 innings, 2 hits, 3 Ks, no walks. So, what do you do with that middle of the road? Middle, it's really tough to see how this rotation is going to pan out because. You've kind of had hit or miss starts from your main candidates. None of them have been bad enough to rule them out, but none of them have been good enough to really etch them into that position yet. I think you could make a
Well, I think what you're saying is the guys who coming into the season who seemed like they had earned those starting weekend spots, those like such as I think Alcea's showing great, glimpses the last inning or so of his outings haven't been too great. But then like you're seeing guys who maybe not coming into the season weren't necessarily the weekend starters, but now they're kind of making a case that they might be, such as the freshman, Sine. And also Lennon Yorick really continuing to evolve, which we'll talk more about them. But you're right. I mean, I think that there is a lot up for grabs still. And part of that is the fact that there was one interesting fact that I noted in my own notes was we've had 15 different pitchers pitch so far this season, and really only like two have like truly struggled, and like 12 to 13 have actually pitched like really well. So like, you know, there's a lot to be seen of like, you know, who of those 12 to 13 that are pitching well have like the length to be starters. I think about at least half of them do. And then half of those can only be the starters. So there is really a lot to still be shaked out.
I think those four or five names that for the starting rotation that I would be pretty firm on, but that the middle relief is kind of what I was getting towards with, you know, with names like Bernard, with names like the name I just talked about from Mineral City, Sarabia, you know. So there's a lot of I'm just really loving the depth that we have in that middle relief, and it really kind of takes the pressure off the coaching staff to overextend these starters.
Yeah, they don't have to.
Late inning troubles, maybe we can think about if we have the resources to be pulling these guys after five quality innings, why not do it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, to your point about Jonathan or Jonas Sarabia, I think it goes back to what we talked about in our preview when we talked about kind of the NIL, the transfer thing, is there's a lot of talent all across the country in all these little small schools like Mineral City CC that you've never heard of. And obviously, you know, as John pointed out, Coach Hannes was very aware of him, probably kept him on his radar, you know, and found a spot for him here on this roster. And you know, in his first outing, came out and did pretty well. Final point I want to make on the pitching, and then we'll start talking about the hitting a little bit. But I think Pontbriant back to, you know, setting up O'Donnell is a pretty nasty combination. When you think about what the two guys are bringing to the table, you know, you get the funky lefty in there. And then you know, you get the quick switch to the hard throwing righty to have to shut it out. And O'Donnell on the back end, you know, I think on Friday night when we saw with Alisaia and Sutton kind of taking whatever's left, that's a pretty good combo. That's probably going to be able to be pretty good on Friday. But then you look at Saturday, Sunday, and these midweeks, you kind of like the fact that I think O'Donnell needs to be ready for every ninth inning.
Any given night,
You know, any ninth inning come in like he did here, get the final two outs. We've seen him come in and get one out. But I definitely think that's a great role. And it's awesome to have. I mean, I don't think we've had somebody that's just been that really hard throwing righty since a fella that left us and now is across the way that's, you know, may or may not be struggling a bit, hitting a bunch of people, giving up games. I don't know. But it's just fun to have a really hard throwing righty that can keep it in the zone and
hint,
set
we
up
might
for
see
jam.
this person this weekend.
I ain't gonna say no names. We're just saying.
No,
But this hitting performance, it wasn't quite as prolific as the one before, but we did have another good day from Eli Thomas and Ryan Pruitt. And then we did see Carson Cabbage today. So I'll give it to you, Mark, first. What did you think of Carson Cabbage behind the plate? And then what did you think of the game?
Yeah, I thought it was great that we got an opportunity to see Carson Cabbage. I was really excited about him when he committed. I think like right when he committed, I texted the group chat like, "Whoa, this guy's stats at JUCO were incredible, especially for a catcher." And he's got pretty good size and athleticism as well. So when he committed, I was kind of like he's kind of like a Lance Triple kind of archetype with athleticism and everything. But maybe even with more power. We didn't get to see him do too much at the plate that day. He had it was 0 for 2, but he did draw a walk, and he did score a run. He looked solid behind home plate. I think we have, like we said before, I think we have three really nice catching options now. I think that day as well, we got to see, like you mentioned, Eli Thomas just continuing doing what he does. And it was a good point you made earlier. It's like, even though I saw him get nine hits this weekend, I didn't see him hit that many balls hard. Meanwhile, you know it's there because he is making contact. And but this is also gave him an opportunity to show off this level of speed and hustle that we weren't even too I wasn't too aware of that. But
Definitely.
yeah, man, I think and then, oh yeah, we also had a this was actually kind of a fun play. Jackson Mirza had the two RBIs there at the end of the game. And I'm happy for him that they counted that as a base hit and the RBIs, because I'm not sure it was, but it and this no, the, in the stat book, nobody cares. It's a hit and it's two RBIs, so we'll take it. And if you didn't get to see it, it was like a bloop to the shortstop, that the shortstop kind of misplayed, tried to catch it like low near the ground in the
Yeah.
air, and he just didn't quite pull it off. But credit to Jackson for putting the ball in play in a high pressure situation. And he did end up hitting some balls hard later in the week, so he's definitely got that too.
Absolutely, John. What'd you think about the offense, bud? Got any notes?
Very few, bud. I'm ready to move on to the weekend. Let's do
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, I do just want to touch on this last point you kind of made about Mirza putting it in play too, is and we'll talk about the power rankings later, but I did look at, when you look at this roster up to down, we don't strike out a lot. We've actually got the lowest strikeout percentage in the conference. A lot of contact. Almost like
That's
that's
really
a
good.
coaching point of sorts,
You would
like, hey,
think.
we're gonna put this ball in play and make it happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, as John said, we're gonna move it on into the weekend. This was a 9-7 victory on Friday night for Edwin Alcea. He picks up his first win. Ethan Sutton picks up his first save as he went 3 innings on the back end. John, man, what'd you think?
I thought that, Alisea got saved a little bit by the game script. I think that's what kind of saved his night. He ran into a tough inning in the fifth, but then we responded in the form of a Kulikowski grand slam in the bottom of that frame. But and I think we matched their five that they scored in the top half. But to be honest, man, he's got some pretty sweet velo. I think his spin rate is relatively high because his fastball stays up through the zone. And I'm not done with Alisea. I think that, he ran into a tough inning. But personally, I mean, you can he limited mistakes in the form of walks. He only had one free base allowed, or I think no, he hit a couple players as
Couple
well.
hit players, yeah.
He
I
did
think they
hit.
were all in the same inning too.
Wow.
I mean, he just blew up, as
Yeah.
that stuff happens, but
Happens.
he kept the pitch count relatively recoverable, and he did what he had to do to get through the outing. But what I really want to talk about is Ethan Sutton. That's one boy that I was high on coming into the season, kind of showing that pedigree of what we were alluding to preseason. I mean, he was dang near perfect. Three innings, he gave up one hit in the form of a solo home run in the top half of the eighth inning, but he struck out seven guys, walking none, did so on 52 pitches. Seven out of the nine outs recorded are strikeouts. That's special to me. Like
Yeah.
that's not everyday stuff. That is very special, and I'm really
Yeah.
excited to see A, that we kind of pop that lid off of Sutton, and B, even more so, what's to come with that kid, because his role is growing, and I don't think anybody. I don't think Hannah's knows what his role is.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, John, because I think in the group chat we were saying like, oh, okay, we got Alcea tonight, maybe Sutton like on Saturday or Sunday, and then we see him in the seventh inning. We're like, whoa, okay, that's actually another good place to have him.
Right.
And one observation I had just watching him on TV was, even though I think the radar gun was saying like 89, 90, I think it was working that night, but that fastball looks very heavy. Like it just looks like it's really like you said, got not you were talking about Alcea, but I think it's, you can say the same about Sutton, the spin rate level and just the heaviness of it. Like it gets on these guys pretty quick, and it just does, it seems like it's they were not picking it up very well. And it may have been part of Georgia Southern, but that same, at the end of the day, the fastball itself looked good on TV. I think I saw some progress on his curveball as well. He had some instances where he was able to get it down more, kind of use it as more of a
I put out.
more change of pace, put out pitch, not necessarily having to work to use it primarily. And I did see a little change up as well, maybe like a couple times. That's a nice thing for him to have in his arsenal as well. But we're just starting to scratch the surface of what he's gonna be. You're right. I mean, he's gonna be really good. Yeah.
In his first outing, his changeup was working well. It had really good run, but that breaker didn't come until, the later innings or, towards the end of his outing. It definitely had a little bit more bite this time around, and the change for us too. So that's great to see. And one last note, Alisaia, I mean, he kind of reminds me a little bit like Dontrell. So like, and with that funky delivery and just heavy fastball, I just feel like I feel like Alisaia is going to stay in our rotation. I don't think we've seen the best of him yet.
I agree entirely. And you look at his body of work too. I mean, he threw 90 pitches and it didn't seem like it was too much, not even close to too much for him. And another thing, credit to him, is he had that rough inning. And like you said, the game script kind of shifted back in his favor. And he came back in the sixth inning when we were in a tied game and put up a zero. I mean, so to do that after giving up 5 runs the inning prior, that's just testament to his like fortitude, So that's good to see as well, especially from a Friday night guy. You need a guy on Friday who, even when they don't have their best stuff, they're still going to eat up innings for you. And he definitely did that.
I think Adam will agree that the fact that he came back out and put up a zero is the only thing that Mitch Haness is thinking about right now. I think that speaks wonders on his ability to respond and recover, and I think that's culture on our team that we're starting to see. Sure, I love that.
That's one of the things you need from a Friday night guy, is to be able to kind of come back from an adverse situation. Stay with me, folks. I'll get it out. But come back out, be able to put the goose egg down, and get the team back right. I believe we actually had a 1-run lead there coming back from the sixth, though. So he was able to kind of we call that a shut the door inning at times, or we did back when I was coaching at times, because when the momentum's kind of flowing back and forth, sometimes this can kind of get back and forth, and what you really want is you tell your pitcher like, hey, we need to kind of shut it down right now. Let's stop it and let's get it going in our direction. That's what we were able to do. But yeah, I think him and Sutton as a combination on Friday night, just I'll say as long as you can go, Sutton, take it as, take the rest of it. O'Donnell, you be ready in case we need you to come in and throw some lightning bolts there at the end. And yeah, I think that's going to get the job done on Friday night, especially if we can pick up 13 hits like we did on Friday night. It was another day, another multi-hit game for Eli Thomas. But the story for this one might have been Jake Kulikowski. Mark, I'll let you start us off on this one. What'd you think of the offense?
No, I think it's awesome that Jake Kulikowski is coming into his own. We got him as a recruit this past offseason, transfer from University of Miami. Somebody that played Tampa Jesuit here, was a highly regarded prospect coming out, considering the fact he ended up in Miami, and just really came here, I think, for an opportunity to just be able to play a little more consistently, and be back in his hometown. And first week, he had some really good moments. I think opening night he had a big hit, but there was, I think over the weekend particularly, I think we started to see him really kind of showcase what he was brought here for, and that's to be an athletic corner outfielder, but also provide a spark at the plate with his power and his speed. So that's exactly what you want from a guy that's hitting in a three hole for you. And that was great. Additionally, you saw Nate Early have a two hit game. Jack Lutz was one of the two freshmen we were talking a lot about earlier, along with Eli Thomas. Jack Lutz, to me, he really impressed me. I can't remember if it was this night or night a couple nights before, making a really good play at third
He had
base.
a web
Like,
gem, yeah.
yeah,
Yeah,
like
nice little
diving,
backhand.
yeah, like diving to the foul line, getting up quickly, throwing a bullet across the diamond. I mean, it's like, whoa, okay, he's got a bat and he can do that. So now you're starting to see, like, all right, now it kind of makes sense why this freshman is getting all these starts at third base. Granted, there are some good options behind him as well that could be getting that opportunity as well, but he has kind of proven why he's earned the role he has.
Yeah, John, what'd you think offensively?
Yeah, you just like seeing multi-hit contributors up and down the lineup. Mark was touching on it with Kulikowski, Lutz, Early. Our boy ET, and then also I think I remember texting the group when the game was going on. I'm just not ready. I was not ready, but I'm fully here for it now for the Brad Keylor resurgence. I think he had two hits on the day, and if you can recall, one of them he just absolutely smoked into the right center corner for a double to really start that inning off. And if you remember, I think we ended up getting a run or two that inning that were pretty crucial down the line. Multiple. And yeah, just I really enjoyed watching that one. It was a great offense he put out for us.
Absolutely. Well, the real big part of that offensive put out was the Jake Kulikowski grand slam, just an absolute missile. And I think that's, we'll talk about, Pruitts in the next one, but I think both of those hits look very similar. They were just absolute line drive missiles that kind of got out of the right center field gap. Not necessarily that towering fly ball that we might have seen from some of our opponents that might have got into a few this weekend, but really, really well struck baseball. Like you said, the freshmen, four hits combined. I don't know how many teams are getting four hits a night out of their freshmen, but we are. Sucks to be you, I guess. I really, really did like to see the at bats Brad Key put together, especially in this one. I think that's where I commented about, we're starting to get the line drive ground ball going. I think that that really plays a lot better than the fly ball, even though that one got out. But I think we really start to see him level out in terms of a swing, and that's what he and he's also a veteran. I mean, he's got a ton of at bats. He's got has to have had way more at bats than anybody else in the lineup.
Career-wise,
Sorry, yeah, I was just looking down, especially at the Division One level. He's a scrappy hitter, good hitter. He makes a lot of contact. I don't think he didn't strike out in this one. I don't remember him striking out a lot this season. I don't have that number in front of me, but really, really big day offensively, but nowhere near as big of an offensive day as we will have on Saturday, as we did set a program record with our 29-4 victory. I don't know if there's a record for first two innings, but what's that? 13 runs in the first two innings. That feels like a lot. But I guess we will get there. First, we'll talk about the pitching. I don't want to say there's not a lot to talk about, but there's definitely not a lot of pitchers to talk about, as Michael Sanae pitched 6.2 of the seven. James Hill came in and had to finish it off, I believe, due to a pitch count situation. He had gotten to 85, and maybe coach was just not really willing to let Sanae get to that 90 mark, which one more batter would have definitely put him there. But it's an interesting day for a pitcher when you're out there and you have such a big lead. There's not a lot of pressure, but there is a game to get through, and so I don't want to downgrade that. John, what'd you think of Sine's start?
I thought it was really good. I think it got overlooked, because of just, the offensive outpouring that we saw from USF. And while it's a shame for Sine, I would take that 11 days out of 10, but what we need to be talking about though is Sine, because I mean he's quietly become one of our leading pitchers, and I think that he's another guy that he's going to become very familiar with the weekend rotation moving forward. He's got 11 and two thirds on the season. He ran into some trouble with an error made by our left fielder. He misplayed a fly ball, and that led to two unearned runs scoring against Georgia Southern there in the first. But he really settled down, and it just you kind of forgot that like they could score runs. And we were just It was he would just mow them down, and then it was just we were just back up putting out one, and that's what you want from your starter. You want it to keep things quiet, calm, collected, get the back in our hands. He had a really great relief appearance against Illinois, and that's why he got this start. And it's a and I hate to say maybe there's a better word for this, but it's a cutthroat culture with Hannah's. It's next man up. Whoever wants it more is going to get it. When you get your opportunities, you're going to have to capitalize, and those who do are going to be the ones that we see when the lights are on, and Michael Sine is taking full advantage of that.
Go
Ahead,
ahead,
Mark.
this was the first regular this game I got to go to in person this season, and what a game to go to. I mean, I feel like I got three games worth in one. But It's funny, his pitching performance was almost just kind of like a quiet thing in the background. And what actually impressed me a lot was he would have some very long breaks in between getting the pitch, and he would just come back out like nothing was wrong. And he the game lasted for over 3 hours, even though it was only 7 innings, and he was basically made himself available for every inning of that game. I mean, as a freshman, just maintain that level of focus and just, I mean, but it doesn't surprise me because after he had that really big appearance against Illinois, I was reading a little more about him, and I think he's from the United States, I believe, grew up here and everything, but he plays on the Czech national team, I think for juniors, like maybe for like 18, 19 or something like that, and honestly, the Czech World Baseball Classic team could probably use him. But they
Not right
can't.
now.
So he pitched in this like world championship or whatever with them, and he pitched against Japan and South Korea, 3 innings in each outing, 0 runs in each outing.
Oof.
Yeah, so I mean, he's been on the big stages before, and he's done it against elite players before, so to see him like be so calm and just poised as a freshman with that experience doesn't surprise me. Whereas kind of reminds me, like, for example, Nolan Bernard last year was very mature for a freshman, and we're seeing a similar presence on the mound from Sine.
If not more.
Yeah, I mean, doing longer outings, and yeah, like very very polished, and I think that international experience and just getting a good first outing there with Illinois, that confidence will keep growing. So it's good to see.
I think I saw that he's from Orlando, Mark. I think he went to East River High School in Orlando.
Yeah, so he grew up, he might have Czech background parents, I'm not sure, but he pitches for them, yeah.
Yeah, I think mother and father, and I think and sometimes even grandparent nationalities can get you
Okay, that's right, yeah.
cleared into like like Lars Nootbaar plays for Japan. He's on like the actual WBC team. Yeah, there's a few things like that that you don't think about, but it's because their parents or their grandparents somehow they get that. Beau Bichette plays for like
Yeah, he does play for somebody.
Brazil or something.
I saw that.
I don't quote me on it, but it's something I remember looking through the rosters and it was just like I did not expect to see Beau Bichette there. Like I said, it's an interesting spot for Sine, especially after you get the big second inning where it then looks like it's not going to get good. It's not going to get good for Georgia Southern on the other side. They essentially put it in cruise control too, like, hey, let's just get to Sunday. And then I can imagine the conversation on the mound with James Hill. It's like, hey, here, I need you to get one out. If they get 20 runs, I'm gonna have to come get you.
I need you to hold this 25-run lead, all right?
Yeah,
Oh, God.
no big
But
deal.
hey,
Hey,
I'm glad we saw him, man. Yeah.
to his credit, three pitches got the out. We were home, so
Yes. Yeah.
good
He looked great.
job. I just
He
I think I
did.
called it the most low pressure spot I've ever seen. Like, I don't.
Yes.
You could probably throw floaters up there and still pull off the. I
It's
mean, you wouldn't get a save,
Yeah,
right?
somebody was sitting
Nothing.
next to me at the game, and when we were scoring all those runs on offense, he was like, "I don't think you can score this many runs if you're hitting off a tee."
Yeah,
I
it's
was like,
crazy, man.
"You're probably
It
right,
was
man."
crazy, and we'll get. I mean, let's get right to it. 23 hits, 28 RBIs, 12 walks, 2 strikeouts. 10 left on base. There were 10 additional runners that got left out there that could have been put in. Big day from Ryan Pruitt, 2 hits, 7 RBIs. We actually got to see a lot of Bulls. This is where we got to see Jackson Geiger, freshman catcher. We got to see Brock Silvers as a freshman. We got to see Gabe Grollo make his appearance here. So yeah, we got to see a lot of runs, a lot of Bulls. A lot of hits. Mark, what'd you think?
Yeah, man, that was just incredible. Just the way that it happened too, like the first inning giving up 2 runs, it's like, is Georgia Southern come to play today? Are we gonna have a we got a series on our hands? Oh no, never mind. It's 8 runs here in the bottom of the first. I guess we don't. And so then the second inning we score 5 runs. So after 2 innings, you're up by 13-3, and man, it was like we're like in the bottom of the third, and it's like 2 hours have gone by. Like, it is insane. It was just like I could not believe it. But
Takes a long time to score 29 runs.
it does, you know. And yeah, Ryan Pruitt's grand slam was awesome. He hit that well. Jack Lutz, four RBIs. I mean, that was great. Jevan Relaford had four RBIs too. I'm trying to recall exactly. There's too many RBIs and runs to remember exactly what's.
Relaford, yeah, Relaford
He
off.
just casually had four RBIs that I barely remember. Gosh, Lance Triple was good to see him get three hits as well, because he had a little bit of a slow start and he's starting to heat back up. And Brad Killory, three hits. I mean, he's seen the ball well. He looks quick. And he's not even somebody that on our team that I think of as a speed guy, but he's pretty quick himself. I wanted to mention that I got to see Gabe Grolot make his collegiate debut, which was really cool. He was probably our highest rated freshman recruit this offseason, and it was the first time we got to see him play. Some other, freshmen have had more opportunities to play thus far. Granted, there are some more established maybe returners in the corner outfield, but man, when I saw him get his first collegiate hit, he barreled up that ball and just drove that line drive over the shortstop's head. It really looked different. It sounded different. Like, you can see that you can see why this guy was MLB prospect, like even coming into this past draft. Like, it reminded me of the first time I ever saw like Drew Butcher get a base hit for USF. It was actually in the regional in Gainesville where I saw his first in person, so see him. And it's the combination of the size and how square on the barrel. I mean, it was there's definitely a lot of upside there with that guy. There's no doubt. And he's
Absolute
fast
jump. Just,
too.
yeah.
Grollo is a five-tool guy, you
Yeah.
know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I believe he's center field heir apparent.
And I will trust his size a lot more in center field. I love a big center fielder. And that's what I was surprised about. Grollo jumped off the screen with his size.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the
Oh,
dude.
yeah, kid.
Specimen, you know what I'm saying? That's what I want to look like when I grow up. So,
And I don't know if it looked like it, but Silver's on paper is bigger.
what's that?
Yeah, you know what? I got to see him make his debut too.
Silver's is bigger.
And I liked seeing him. I mean, I only saw one plate appearance of his, but he was good. I
He
mean,
didn't get to swing. He
he had a
got,
good eye. You know,
yeah.
he was patient. Good size as well. I mean, I saw both of them play a little bit in the fall. Man, we're so deep offensively, man. We've had 21 different position players get an at bat. I have that might be tops in the country or close to it. And granted, winning 29-4 helps you get more people involved. But I mean, there's a lot of options offensively. Coach Hannes definitely has his work cut out to really get into a core. It's going to end up being a core 12 to 13 guys, I think, because there will be an element of platooning that will continue, I think. But a lot of good options. A lot of good options.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, we alluded to earlier in the show to Lance Triple. He got his first two RBIs on the Friday night game, and then he came unglued on Saturday. I think that not getting to play against North Dakota State at like really at all, I think he got that might have brought him back to earth a bit. And really kind of he put on a show. Mark, you did a really good job on hit. We could sit here and talk about all day about the offensive numbers. What I'll leave it with is I really hope that Hannah's made Relaford and early run Poles being the only two guys that struck out that day. They really just need to pick it up, I mean, do better.
That's not unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
Yeah, I like you said, we could go on and on. I think the last thing I want to leave it on is I really want to highlight the actual day that Ryan Pruitt had. We talked about this grand slam, seven RBIs. He was 2 for 2 because he had four walks. He had two stolen bases, just everything. And that's kind of what he is. I think when you look at Ryan Pruitt, he's not an overt power guy. You're probably not looking at him like a a defensive specialist in center field, although he's a very good defensive center fielder. Runs pretty good, gets a little overshadowed with Relaford, right, in terms of the speed, but he just does everything, and he does everything well, right? It's not even a jack of all trades. He's kind of a plus in everything, except, you can maybe say maybe not the power, but we saw that. If he can put a few more hits together, then that's going to really, just to call a spade, it's going to really up his draft stock, and that's kind of what he's doing right now. Well, we will move on. We completed the sweep, the week sweep, the 5-0. It was a little tighter on Sunday as we had to get all the way down to the ninth to actually get some stuff going. But we did see Landon York make a start. I believe this is his first start of the season. He goes 5.2. We saw him start last season. We've seen him do just about everything in his USF career. John, what'd you think of his outing today and what we backed it up with?
Yeah, he was my pitcher of the week coming into this one. And yeah, he's a square that fits in every hole, no matter what the shape. I was really impressed with his velo. He kept it up through his entire start. He was able to mix those 3 to 4 pitches that he had. He kept batters off balance really, really well. Limited mistakes and let defense work behind him, and I thought it was just a really effective start. And his hair looked fantastic, as it always does, for sure.
Absolutely. Mark, what do you think, bud?
Yeah, I think it's great to see that his role is expanding in the way that it has. I mean, if you think about the beginning of his time with USF, he was coming from JUCO, where he was mostly a relief pitcher there, but maybe a couple spot starts. Came to us last year, was basically middle relief, then got more high leverage, then was I think closing out games at some point. Then ended up having that great start against UF in that win. And yeah, to see how hard he's stretched out now, and the way that he's kind of just growing is, I think it's also a testament to the fact that we're doing a good job developing here, with Coach Schlereth as a pitching coach. You're seeing guys that are entering their second year of the program that are doing better than they were when they got here, which is exactly what you want to see. So credit to Yorick and credit to the coaching staff too.
Yeah, you know what? When I see Yorick and I just see his demeanor on the field, I see the kind of the way he goes about it. You see him throw a pitch and the hat kind of flops everywhere, the hair's everywhere. Feels like he's one of those kids where, as a coach, you just look up and you're like, "Hey, I need you to go do this today." And, when you say that to some kids, you might get a kid if he's a starter and you're like, "Hey, I need you to come in and relieve today." He's like, "Well, you got to give me X amount of time because I'm used to going through this program. I got to da 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 da," or vice versa. You got a kid that's usually a reliever, like, "Hey, I need you to start." He's just like, "What do I do with my hands?" And I feel like York's not. He's just like, "Hey, I need you to go do this." "Yeah, coach, cool. Let's go do it." "Hey, yo, go play right field." "Sure, why not?" I feel like he's that kind of kid that'll just come in and give you what you need no matter what you've done. We've seen him kind of go into every hole. That we've needed and fill every spot. Great start. Probably gonna, I think this could be our rotation. I don't know why it wouldn't be, with Alisaia going then to Sine and then to York. I think all three have kind of done pretty well in getting into that 5 and 6 kind of. I think all of them went at least five.
Yeah, which is
Yeah.
exactly what you
So all of
want.
them go at least five, kind of getting stretched out into that. I think we've got great options in the middle relief to coming back over that. When you think of Bernard, you think of Sutton, Poitrion, and then we've got O'Donnell on the back end. So just a lot of good things going on there. Sorry, I threw my papers in a tizzy.
You macro.
But I guess I just wanted to finish this off on the pitching. Just say, big time for Landon O'Donnell to come in and get the win. That's the high pressure spots that we're going to need him to come in and perform if he's going to be that guy. When you come in, top of the ninth, I think it was tied, right? We got to keep it there. Can't give it up. We end up winning it in the bottom.
You know what was a big pitching thing too was Nolan Bernard had a rare appearance where he was struggling a little bit. He's usually really solid. And I think the bases, I can't remember if there was two runners on or maybe bases loaded, but bases loaded. Caden Smith came in.
And we only gave up one, right?
Bases loaded, one
Big time.
or no outs and one out. But Caden Smith is really good for situations like that because he has swing and miss stuff. He has a curveball or a slider, like something that bends well, could both directions.
Done great.
And it's perfect for generating swing and miss along with good velo and a couple, maybe one or two other secondary pitches. But he can generate swing and miss, which is what you need in a situation like that, and induced some weak contact, got us out of that jam, which really preserved our chance to win that game. So Caden Smith, besides Yorick, might be the MVP of that game, just with the pitching performance.
Absolutely. Well, offensively, again, not a lot of runs. We did have nine hits, which might kind of shock some people if you watched that game, because it just the offense felt really anemic for most of it. But Jake Kulikowski has another big hit, or another two-hit game. Nathan Early has a two-hit game. We mentioned Gabe Grollo, why he doesn't get in the game. It's that those are two of the names. I know Early's playing first base in this one, but he does spend time in the outfield. We've got Jake Green that spends time in the outfield. We saw the play he made, which we didn't even talk about. I don't know how we missed that. That was ESPN top number one top play against North Dakota State when he goes barreling into the left field bleachers. Or I'm sorry, not the bleachers, the left field wall to make the catch. Shout out Jacob Green. So I mean, again, back to the point, that's why some of these big time freshmen aren't getting in, because we got some upperclassmen that are really playing well and making plays. Right. Well, so again, slow start offensively. Pruitt again does get the double. Jake Kulikowski, like we talked about, got the multi hits. Lance Triple got a stolen base in this one. That's kind of one thing I wanted to point out about how we have three different catchers with three different skill sets. One of the skill sets for Lance Triple is he is athletic as hell and he can run. I think it's not, this was his first stolen base. For some reason, I feel like he had another one. He might have got caught, but it was close. But yeah, Jacob Green, big at bat there at the end, got sac fly. Can't really speak enough about that. The job was to get the guy home from third, got the guy home from third, and that's exactly what we needed to do. Well, I do want to point out too, the kid for Georgia Southern, Holder, on a weekend where they were absolutely abysmal on the mound, that kid did really good. He had a really good day. That as a team, they had zero walks. And so they really turned it around. And you know what? We're rooting for you from here on out, Georgia Southern. I hope you're not historically bad. We hope you can really turn it around. I think if they can figure out some starters, they probably got a pretty good chance. They've got a pretty good lineup. Any final thoughts on this series, John? We'll start with you.
My final notes on this series, more so this game, was just kind of to expand on Lance Triple a little bit. And the hit that came in the bottom of the seventh was with two outs, and then that was an RBI single to right center field, and then he was the only person on base after that, and he stole second base, and that kind of fired everybody up. And then also in the ninth inning, he had a one out RBI single, I believe this time to left field. Both just huge at bats. And if you remember Lance last year, man, he just has like the lowest heart rate I've ever seen in clutch situations. The bigger the situation, it just doesn't get to him, and I don't know. You can't really teach that. And I love that we have three good catchers on our roster right now, but he's my guy moving forward until he proves otherwise. I'm going to be as patient as we need with Lance, and I'll wait all day for him because he's another five tool guy. Like we said, a catcher who's stealing 10 plus bags in a college season is A-okay by me.
Yeah, Mark, any final thoughts?
Yeah, no, you're right. It was a clutch game for him. I mean, both in the seventh inning and the ninth inning to get those clutch RBI singles, which really was a huge factor in the outcome of the game. No, I just think it was cool to see the Bulls win a blowout on Saturday, but then also show that they can get a come from behind win on Sunday. So being able to win in different ways is really good to see.
Yeah, I think anytime you get a sweep, you got to be happy. I think anytime you sweep a week, especially when you got two midweeks, you got to be happy. Like I said, we're gonna hope some of these teams do a little better and kind of raise that RPI. But I think as we get into these games we're about to preview, we're gonna start getting some games on our schedule. I think it's gonna help that whole RPI thing as it begins to shake out. But before we do that, we're gonna talk about our players of the week. So I'm gonna send this one around the horn, guys. Of these five games, who really stood out to you the most? Mark, you ready? You wanna go first?
John, you're ready. You can go.
I'm probably gonna just stick with what I know and go with Lance Triple. He's a leader on this team that doesn't have many familiar faces. Plays the most important position, arguably on the field. We need him both in between and outside the lines to help this team grow and become what they're going to become this year. We have aspirations to get an at-large bid. I'll say it out loud. So we're going to need those core leaders, and he's one of those guys. He can produce on every facet of the game, and he's just a difference maker. And I loved seeing him come to life this week. So here's to you, Lance.
That's a
I'll go ahead
good
and go
one.
and just get the elephant in the room out of the way. My player of the week is Eli Thomas. 9 hits for the freshman. We talked about the 3 straight games with multi-hit games. We talked about the variety of ways it was happening. You had the shots to the gap, you had the ground ball choppers he's beating out 4 RBIs so that getting the team some RBIs. He's the guy on third, sprinting home to get that game-winning run on Sunday. He's DHing right now. He doesn't really have a defensive spot in the lineup. You wonder what he's waiting on. We know he's an infielder. I think he might have a few defensive innings at second. I think when he pinch hit, he may have went to second that game. Maybe not. I don't know, because I don't know that Brad Keelori has been lifted this season. He may be the shortstop apparent. We talked about Gabe Grillo being the heir apparent in center field. Maybe Eli Thomas is waiting for shortstop to open up. I know he can move, so I'm sure there's range there. And so we'll just have to kind of see how this plays out. Right now, he's doing very well as a DH, leading the team, if not in the top three. I'm not sure if he's still there. I know he was at one point throughout this weekend. And was hitting over 400. And so big props to you, ET, phone home. Not sure if you're old enough to even get that reference or even like it, but appreciate you, bud. That was a great week.
Yes, it was. My player of the week will be Ryan Pruitt. He's had a hit in every game so far this season. So he is that puts him on a 8-game win a hit streak. This past week, he had 9 RBIs on the week. He had a couple doubles. He had a home run with the grand slam, obviously. A couple multi-hit games, plays nice defense in the center field, shows off some speed on the base paths. It's great to see somebody from last year's team take a step forward. Last season he had a really hot start, and towards the middle end he was pretty decent, but not quite to his potential. So now let's see him take this hot start and kind of run with it for the rest of the season.
Absolutely. And I do want to give an honorable mention out to Jake Kulikowski.
Yeah, he had a good
Yeah,
one too.
couple games with some multi hits, had the big grand slam. So definitely want to give him a shout out here too. I'll make him a co-player of the game for me, player of the week for me. All right. Well, now we're going to take a look at our conference mates and kind of take a look at what they did this past weekend, and then take a brief look at what they got coming up. I can tell you, some of the most interesting kind of things throughout the conference was that ECU played North Carolina. They actually lost the Friday night. And that's an interesting series that they play. They actually play one game at Chapel Hill. They play one game at ECU, and then they play one game at a neutral location, I believe, that's in between. I believe those two schools are very close to each other. I'm not completely familiar with the geography of North Carolina, but I believe they're very close together. It's actually an interesting concept that USF and UCF could actually could explore, where you have a home and home, and then a neutral kind of Sunday. But again, I thought it was interesting. It didn't work out for them in this series because East North Carolina wins Friday, ECU wins Saturday. They actually have the game called on Sunday in the sixth, and they're tied at three. So it's an exact tie. No way to really look at it any other way. Again, pretty interesting. I do want to give shout out to UAB. They got a big series win against Cincinnati. UTSA swept Dallas Baptist, which is actually kind of impressive when you think that last I saw Robert Olosky, Pat Hallmark did not want to go so far as to say he is out for the season, but he did say we will not see him anytime soon. It is a shoulder injury, and they are waiting for final imagery to give a final call on that. So all the fears that they thought seems like might be coming to fruition. Again, they're just not ready to make that call. And then last thing I'll mention is Wichita State actually went over to Hawaii, took the travel down to the island to try to play four games, split it 2-2. I'm just going to say it's hard. It's hard to go to the island and play, to travel all that way and then to have to get up and play a really good Hawaii team. They're not slouching themselves. But did any of that stand out to you, John? Were you able to catch any of our conference mates playing?
For sure, yeah, no, and to I was listening to 11.7. I didn't get to listen to it yesterday. I was tuned in this morning, and they were like, "Oh, there goes the Hawaii Regional with the two losses," because they were mentioning that they have to you pretty much got to win those out in order to host a regional. But I do like where their heads are at there, though. I really do. What really stood out to me, bud, was you talk about all the stuff that UTSA has endured, right? Of course, they should have won the conference last year. They get in on a bid, and deservingly so. They killed last season, and then you talk about Orlovsky is from UTSA, right? And so they endure that loss. They endure all the loss that they do to draft and to transfers last season. You're like, what are they going to be bringing? I kind of wrote them off a little bit. And then they say, "Hey, Dallas Baptist, we're about to hand that ass this weekend." Sweeping Dallas Baptist is one of the biggest statements I've ever seen that I can think of in a weekend two. There were some big statements this weekend, dude. Like Charlotte, after a shaky start, Woody is having none of that, And then they get Wright State coming to town, who I don't believe is a bad baseball school. I don't think they're great. I think I'm conflating them with Murray State a little bit, who had that run last year in the regionals. But to see them get back on the right side of the scoreboard is it's good for them. It sucks for us. But no, yeah. And Wichita State falling off, I mean, a little bit at least, So it's everything, like you said, it's everything is ebbing and flowing right now. And I think everything's kind of sorting itself out. But I think the biggest statement for me, man, it has to be UTSA. Dallas Baptist is a like perennially great baseball school, one of the best mid-majors every single year. They're in the top five. I think this knocked them out of the top five, to be honest. I think they're actually behind us at 12, if I'm not mistaken, in the most recent power rankings.
Dallas Baptist, they did, yes.
Yeah. Are we going to talk about that a little bit tonight? Because I do have a note there with the
Yeah,
power.
we can mention that in a little bit, yeah.
Okay, cool. So, I mean, as far as what stood out this weekend to me, I would say it's really just that. Oh, big one. There should not be a tie. Oh, my goodness. There had to have been at least one coach in that stadium saying, "I don't care if I have to stay here until 1 in the morning, let's play." Like, that's crazy talk to me. And I think that that could really. You don't see it until the end of the season, but it could really come into play and really affect things, as far as how things shake out. So, I'm really disappointed to see a tie there for sure.
I think what happened there, and this could be the argument against my whole this is a cool idea, but like I said, that Sunday game is at a neutral location. So
Yeah.
neither school really has a lot of control about what goes on at that field. in terms of waiting till midnight or doing whatever we have to do to play. If that game's on campus at on one of those campuses, then you could say that, we're going to be here and do it out. But I think because that field's at a neutral location, they were a little limited in how long they could wait. I know they waited a long time, and then it got to where field's saturated, there's more coming. And so, like I said, it's not their field. So you got both sides plus the people that represent the facilities that are in on that decision versus it being on campus. But yeah, you hate ties, but I hated it. It was one of the games I had picked in my 11.7 week, so it was a wash for everybody, but it is what it is.
And ECU losing both of Ethan Norby's starts so far?
That's interesting, right? He's supposed to, or I mean, all projections were this could be one of the best left-handed pitchers in the country, and yeah, 0-2.
He sure looked like it versus us in the tournament. My
I
goodness.
fully expect it to turn around. Yeah, I don't expect that to be. I mean, I don't expect that to be a trend. It would be really shocking if that continues.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, looking at the midweek slate real quickly, I think the only thing to really point out is Florida Atlantic will play Miami at home on Wednesday. Of course, we've got our Bethune-Cookman game on Tuesday. Nobody else really around the league is playing a real marquee midweek matchup. If you look at the weekend, I do want to point out UTSA will be in a pretty big tournament. They'll play Ohio State, then they will play Coastal Carolina at a good time to catch Coastal Carolina as they're down a couple of All-Americans. And then they will finish up with Baylor. So three either P5 or P4 or marquee G5 matchups for them. Of course, we have our matchup with UCF, and I believe that's the marquee series. And we will be talking about that really, really soon. Before we do that, though, we'll go ahead and look at the 11.7 rankings. If you follow them, they are the mid they do mid-major power rankings. I think they're the best that do it. I know there's a few other outlets out there that are doing it. I believe these guys are the best ones doing it. But number one is the Southern Miss Golden Eagles. I'm just going to kind of point out some highlights. UTSA is the highest American team. They sit at number three. Coastal Carolina dropped to four. Bulls are sitting at number 11. Dallas Baptist, as you mentioned, dropped to 12. Charlotte from the American sits at 15. ECU still hanging on at 17. I believe that is all from the American. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Well, UAB is at 25, so I missed them. What do you think about these rankings?
I am really, man, a lot. So Southern Miss, I'm glad that we have a home and home set up with them. It proves that our trajectory is going in the right direction. We're starting to get people, teams like this inked for the next two, three seasons in the foreseeable. Coastal Carolina, I watched them quite a bit. They get thumped by Illinois. I think once they're starting pitching, they're really banged up too, throughout their lineup, and I think that once they've got the pitching to be formidable. The guy that was throwing against North Carolina on Sunday before it got rained out, I really actually liked the way he threw. He was super erratic, but effectively wild and
You
really
talking
good.
about for ECU?
Oh wait, yeah, no, I'm conflating names. Scratch that. But anyways, I was talking about Coastal Carolina. Who did they play on Sunday?
I think they had Illinois all three games. They had a series of Illinois.
I thought that was a little tournament with like Virginia Commonwealth and then
It very well could have been. I was only familiar with the game on Sunday.
but yeah, no, I think that they've got the pitching to make it formidable. But I mean, if you look at how they present on 11.7, for those who don't follow, they break it down 1 through 5, 6 through 10, 11 through 15. And I really think that their statements are at the 1 and the 5, the 6 and the 10, the 11 and the 15. And the fact that we're at 11, it means a lot more. It means they barely just kept us out of that top 10. They need to see a little bit more from us, whereas you look at a team, like the Charlotte 49ers, who are at 15, They made a climb up this weekend, but not as big of one. So they're at the bottom of that tier. I think the fact that we're at 11 says a lot more than what meets the eye. And how about Kent State? I mean, I know
Took
that,
a series from Tennessee.
dude, that was unreal. You
Crazy.
took Friday Night Magic to prevent them from getting swept. I know they'll be coming to OU this year, so I might have to go check out because 11.7 was talking about some of their pitchers that, man, they just sound like they're winging it out there. So good on them for for making that the biggest jump in history for them. So definitely an exciting little grouping here. Some new names that we're not used to seeing, and some names that we're used to seeing up in that top 10 kind of taking some steps down. So very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as you pointed out, I think we got an opportunity here to really jump into that top 10. I think if we can take the series against UCF and take our midweek, pull 3 wins out of this next 4 games, we're absolutely going to be probably pushing into that top 5 ranking, I would imagine. But speaking of rankings, we do have week 2 of our American Athletic Power rankings. We don't have the image ready to post. We'll get that posted soon. I do want to run through it really quick, though. UTSA jumped up to the top spot, followed by South Florida. Charlotte at number 3. Wichita State dropped to 4 after losing 2 to Hawaii. Tulane at 5. UAB is at 6. 7 is Rice. 8 is ECU. And 9 is FAU, and 10 is Memphis. So, like I said, we'll get the image kind of posted on that, and we can get the conversation going around there. Just right now, I think it's kind of important to point out that a lot of these metrics, especially when you look at RPI and SOS and stuff like that, they're going to take some time to really kind of shake out. But overall, I think right now I'm pretty happy with the way that the model is shaking it out. I tend to agree with the way it's ranked out. Did anything stand out to you?
No, I think that I actually agreed with pretty much all of them. I think I would slot Wichita below, so move UAB and Tulane up and put Wichita right below them in between, right above Rice. But I don't think Wichita has shown us enough in hindsight. They got that four game sweep in the opening weekend, and we're all like, hey, yeah, look good, feel good, play good. Okay, well, it's a long season and they have to play some real talent, and apparently. It's Wichita State baseball. So I do like Tulane, and I think UAB is bringing some smoke this year that not a lot of people are talking about. And I think it's just going to continue to develop out there in Birmingham. So, But honestly, I think that this year we are a lot more competitive top to bottom. Memphis being a standout and to be determined on who the other bad teams are going to be. But I don't think it's going to be much more past Memphis and maybe. Rice question.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I was a little interested about where Wichita State was going to slot after their weekend, but I do think that the way the model is shaping up now, it is still weighting, the overall record over the RPI because of just how finicky RPI can be right now overall. Not saying that RPA is not, involved, but the 6 wins for Wichita is still kind of carrying them, I think, right now. Again, we got a couple more series. We're going to get it all shaked out. But we'll get moving on now. Our first matchup that we want to preview really quickly before we get out of here is going to be against Bethune-Cookman University. History-wise, 22 wins, 10 losses for the Bulls. I believe our last matchup was a 10-9 loss. So that, yeah, 25, 10-9 loss to Bethune-Cookman. If you are listening to 11.7 like me and John R, you will know that Ben Upton has been very high on Bethune-Cookman. He believes this lineup is actually for real. And he is actually making a case that Bethune-Cookman actually needs to throw their Friday and Saturday night guys in the midweek, because that's where their marquee matchups are, and their series are a little less. And so when you hear it, it doesn't sound terrible if your schedule works out that way, where your marquee, if your Friday night guy is going to go once a week and your biggest game of the week is in the midweek and not on Friday, Maybe it makes some sense. I'm not so sure. What are you going to be looking for in this midweek matchup?
I hope, I remember that game in Daytona because it was an away game, and they were just, it was just chaotic. I don't remember like the complete ins and outs of the game. I remember it being a pretty low point for me last season when when you lose to BCU. It's regardless of what it actually means on paper, it makes you feel a certain way because you kind of used to stomp them all the time. But you're starting to see BC, like they were pretty dang serious last year, for them being Bethune-Cookman. I was really impressed with their bats. They had a few good arms, and we weren't even seeing their Friday night guy like you were just talking about. I've been thinking about that conversation quite a bit today. I was kind of wondering, and they make a good point. They're playing such washes on the weekend. All they have to do is win their conference. RPI really doesn't matter for a team like Bethune-Cookman. So, like, I mean, that's the only. It's kind of like damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I thought that was an interesting take on their show this morning. I think that if we go there and play anything close to what we've been playing, I do not think it will be a very competitive ball game, though. I think you're looking at two different classes of ball club.
Yeah, last time we played it was a roller coaster, as a lot of midweek games can be. Ended up going into 10 innings where we won, or we lost 10-9 in the bottom of the 10th. But I think we got to come out swinging. Like I said, their lineup's for real. Their lineup's going to hit it, so we're going to have to come out swinging. I'm going to be interested to see who we see pitching wise on this midweek. I think we're likely to see Lawson Gailey get another appearance here in the midweek. I'm not really sure kind of what we're really shaping up for to get ready for our, it's a real big series we got coming up with UCF, but so you're not sure if you're going to see Caden Smith in this midweek game again after just going on Sunday. He's probably going to take a rest here on Tuesday. But you never know. You could see Nakniana again get another midweek. He's going to have to get some opportunities to work it out. So you might see him get an appearance in this one as well. But yeah, could be a real fun one. It's going to be a midweek. I expect an up and down game. And again, I think we're going to have to bring it or we're going to get a loss here. But that does move us to the UCF series. Last matchup was not good. If you remember last year, we had that series. If you remember last year, we kind of had a trend where we would run rule teams and then we would turn around and get run ruled. It happened like three or four times throughout last season. This UCF series was one of them where it happened to us twice. And you heard Coach Hannes talk about it. They brought a big time left-handed team and they really got to us. What I do want to point out is important is in the history of matchups, 39 wins, 39 losses. So this series will be a battle for the all-time lead in the series. We're going to be over in Orlando. I know they got a guy that some people are talking about in Golden Spikes. You've seen some highlights, Williamson, an outfielder that's hitting absolute bombs. John, what are you thinking about this UCF series and what are you looking for?
I don't think UCF has really shown much. The kind of ball club that they're coming in with, but there's really nothing to write home about on paper that they've done this season yet that really, really makes you kind of tuck your tails and run. I know the kind of talent that this team's working with. They got a three-headed monster in the weekend rotation, and even Chandler Dorsey has filled in for some starting help as well. So they've got the pitching, and then they had some elite transfers come in, with this year, and they really filled the gaps that they lost in via draft and transfer last year. So I mean, they're a really complete team, but I'm not ready to concede anything to them. They are and always will be our little brother, and I say that with my chest fully freaking out. Like I would love to go there and remind them of this. I think that the only you mentioned your starting rotation earlier in the show. I think that the only change I would make there is Caden Smith over York, just because I think that those three arms are just going to be lethal when you pair them up together in a weekend. So I really think that starting pitching and limiting mistakes and capitalizing on UCF's mistakes, because they're a pretty sound ball club on the defensive side, and from a pitching standpoint, they do limit free passes, and we're really going to have to capitalize on RBI positions and limit our mistakes.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a tough matchup. Going to have to come out and play our game. They opened up the season with Siena, which is really, again, nothing to write home again. They run ruled them. They did give Miami all they wanted in a midweek, 13 innings, lost 7-8. They played in a tournament this past weekend. They got a win in 10 innings over Notre Dame, who there are some people thinking Notre Dame could make some noise. Then took a loss to Indiana, and then LSU did what LSU does and gave them an 11-run, 7-inning walkout. Interesting. Their midweek has already been postponed, so they're not going to play Jacksonville before we go to them and for our series. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. We're going to have to swing it. I think it's always a good matchup. Yeah, I don't have anything to say about them really. I don't look into them too much, other than, again, I see this Williamson kid that everybody keeps posting, and he has hit some absolute towers. And so you're gonna have to wonder how we're gonna pitch to him, and hopefully we can get him into some positions that we don't have to necessarily come at him. But they've also got a Lodice. If you remember the Lodices, one played for Georgia Tech, one played for Florida State. I can't remember who he's the brother of and cousin of, but he's a little brother of one of them. I believe his name is Jordan, and he plays shortstop for them. So I expect him to be pretty good as well. But any final thoughts on that, John?
Yeah, it should be noted that unless their midweek was planned for Friday, the forecast for Orlando this week is 0% chance of rain on Monday and Tuesday, 3% and 4% on Wednesday and Thursday. So I'm sure there's a super valid reason as to why they're canceling their midweek before our series, and I just can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah. Well, it is in Jacksonville, so I don't know what the weather was there. But
A
it
bit of
still feels early. I living in Florida, there has not been that much rain. I just feels really early. I'm not sure why they canceled it. Like they did have a tournament there, but it doesn't look like anybody played at the JU's park, so I don't even know why. Who knows? It's what they do, you know? That's
seems a
what the
suspicious.
University of Central Florida does.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying,
Goodness.
Adam.
We're going to bring it to them. Well, Bulls fans, I think that's all the time we got for this week. We're going to get, again, all these games are away. Our next home game is March 6th. So be looking for these games. Remember, Bethune-Cookman will be on YouTube, not on ESPN. You're going to have to go to YouTube to watch the Bethune-Cookman. We apologize now if the broadcast is less than, less than, but hey, at least we're going to get to watch it. Yeah, you'll get ESPN Plus for the UCF series. Well, John, you got any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
I am just hoping for another exciting week at UCF, USF baseball against UCF. I am really excited to see us take it to them this weekend. I'm really fired up, and now I have to go upstairs and see my wife, who's a UCF grad. So I'm going to have to try to bring that heart rate down a bit, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, be sure to like us and follow us on social medias. Like the podcast and share and like the podcast on YouTube, as well as anywhere that you are enjoying your podcast or this podcast. But until next time, go Bulls.
The Bulls.